We're talking about the transfer of power by President Trump on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Here, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo fielding questions yesterday from reporters at the State Department about the transition. Pompeo insisted the election is TBD.
There will be a smooth transition to a second Trump administration. All right, we're ready. The world is watching what's taking place here. We're going to count all the votes. When the process is complete, there'll be electors selected. There's a process. The Constitution lays it out pretty clearly.
What are your thoughts on President Trump not conceding and most Republicans standing behind him, not acknowledging Biden as the winner? It's 800-642-1234. Martha Kumar is director of the White House Transition Project. She's a professor emeritus of political science at Towson University. Martha, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Well, you know, your tagline for the project is smoothing the peaceful transition of democratic power. Can you live up to that? Is that possible without a willing party?
Well, this certainly is starting out as a rocky transition, all right. But you can see that Biden has assumed that, and according to the electoral count, vote count, and according to the popular vote count, that he is the president-elect. And it doesn't depend on the on a concession speech by the other candidate. So he has, from early spring, been working on transition and put together a group of knowledgeable people. So he's been working on the notion that he might have to go forward without the support of the government.
Give us a little preview, if you will, about how presidential transitions go, because these can be pretty intense, like getting up to speed and making sure that every agency, you understand the inner workings of it. That is just a huge undertaking. Help us understand how this process works.
Yes. It's when years ago, before Kennedy was elected, political parties were the ones that provided funding for a president-elect. And it was not a big, there was no real role for government. But starting in with 1963 legislation that Johnson signed in 64 is the Basic Presidential Transitions Act. And the idea was that, in fact, it is a time that requires government to go in and help smooth that passage of power from one president to another. And so office space was provided, and the General Services Administration was at the heart of the transition operation, because they control all the offices and property of the federal government. And that was that's a big aspect of it. And also things like computers and all the resources that one would need. So they became the central factor. Then gradually there's a recognition, well, the government wasn't providing enough money, so you should raise private money. You could raise private money as long as it was limited to $5,000 a person and that it was publicly reported. And so then gradually more was done. President Clinton created at the end of the administration, a White House Transition Coordinating Council that would be involved in developing policy and help the transition, guide the transition for other parts of the government, not just GSA, but develop policy that would control things like preparing information, gathering materials. And that Transition Coordinating Council then was established in law in 2015 legislation that was the Presidential Transitions Improvements Act. And so there are two councils. That council has to be created 6 months before the election, as does the Agency Transition Directors Council. So the White House Transition Coordinating Council establishes policy from the White House point of view. The chief of staff and a deputy are the co-chairs. And then the Agency Transition Directors Council are representatives of all the 15 departments, and then there are another 7 agencies that have been included this year. And they work on carrying out the policy of the White House Council. And so they direct what kinds of materials are provided.
And it could be, you know, top secret materials. You may need to have security clearance.
Oh, absolutely. There will be. One of the laws that that was passed in 2010 Act is the Pre-Election Presidential Transition Act, and that too is part of the basic transition law. And what it provides is that after the party nominating conventions, the candidates can get space from the General Services Administration.
And Emily Murphy is the legal authority as administrator of the General Services Administration.
Yes, she is. And that the aspect of the law that calls for the administrator to ascertain the winner was right there in the 63 Act. Mm. And generally, what the transition legislation has done is tried to react to circumstances. So they recognize more money needed to be raised. And then that went into law. It needed to be done, started earlier. And then it needed direction, not just from GSA, but it was an all of government operation that needed to be led by the president through his transition.
Much larger in scope. And I just want to point out here, Murphy has the legal authority to turn on the transition, releasing $6.3 million in federal funds that are budgeted for that. What you've been saying, office space, you know, empowering people to visit agency offices and request information, all that digital information. I want to just point out here, we're talking with Martha Kumar, director of the White House Transition Project. It's a project that started in 1999, providing information to a new White House staff about their individual offices and streamlining the process of transition from one administration to the next. Your insights here, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in David in Menominee Falls. Hi, David. What would you like to ask Martha?
Really just a comment. I just want to comment that I think the mainstream media is doing a great disservice to those people who only consume their product. There's a process. There's a legal process. There is the mantra of there's no evidence of widespread fraud. There is a lot of evidence, and you just have to go, you don't have to look very far for it. But I think it's going to be a great shock if Pennsylvania, if those ballots get thrown out, if Pennsylvania turns, if Georgia goes for Trump. I think the boards on the windows of the
David, I want to stop you there. So David is saying here that wants to see every vote counted, wants to make sure the recounts are done. Martha, what is that situation where you see Americans who do not trust what just took place in the election?
I think principles that Trump has been working by is that his belief that government is not a good force in people's lives, and he has been wanted to delegitimize government institutions and also the media. Voter fraud has just not been found in any of the states. If they're going to recount the ballots for the president, then they can recount the ballots then for all of the Republicans that won election. because it's all on one ballot. So should it be all of the offices should be recounted? That in fact the Republicans did very well in Congress, in their congressional elections, and so we hear a lot about recounting for Trump. But if you're recounting ballots, then you have to recount for the other offices too, I would think.
In every other presidential race, and correct me if I'm wrong, for the past 60 years, the determination of a winner was made within 24 hours, even as legal challenges and recounts continued for weeks. What is different this time?
What is different is that the president has directed that he doesn't believe that he lost. He thinks that he has won, and people know his members of the Senate of his party what his position is, and they're willing to go along with it. How long they will do that is unknown, but there is a real cost to this. And that is the position of the presidency, the office of the presidency, where you establish leadership. And under our system, where of rule of law, continuity in government is particularly important. And that's why we have the Presidential Transition Act.
And I want to pause there on the Presidential Transition Act with political scientist Martha Kumar. Wrote the book Before the Oath, How George W. Bush and Barack Obama Managed a Transfer of Power. Do you worry about the next 70 days and the transition of power from President Trump to President-elect Biden? Or do you think it will end up going smoothly? What are your questions about how presidential transitions work? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Martha Kumar on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Martha Kumar. She's director of the White House Transition Project. President-elect Biden's transition to power in part hangs on this word ascertainment. The formal presidential transition doesn't start until the administrator of the General Services Administration ascertains who is the, quote, successful candidate in the election. But how that determination is made is murky. Martha, you were talking there about the Presidential Transition Act promoting this orderly transfer of executive power. Is the act being tested now, and what are the national security implications?
Yes, well, it certainly is being tested because there is so much that GSA and the 15 departments have done preparing information for the president-elect, and that information is just sitting there. It can't be turned over until there is a declaration by the administrator that there is a president-elect. And so he's not getting the materials on the departments and agencies, their programs, what are the hot-button issues they're working on, significant pieces of legislation, schedules of what kinds of international conferences there are and other kinds of deadlines that are there. Because when a president comes in, he's hopping on a moving train. Government is moving, things are happening, and he needs to know well beforehand, as do the people he's choosing. And knowing what the issues are in a department is important for him to know what kinds of people he needs to appoint, not just as the department secretaries, but the deputy secretaries and assistant secretaries. And he also is not getting the type of briefing, national security briefing, that a president-elect would get, which is more information than the candidates get. So they also do not have access to talk to people in the government, the people that he is choosing to be on his agency review teams. These are groups that go into the departments and agencies.
And how many political appointments are we talking about here?
Well, if you could say overall, the presidents can appoint about 4,000 people.
Uh-huh.
But you're not appointing 4,000 people when you come in. You know, you're looking at around 75 people that you want to focus on in your first months in office. And so you'd like to have a slate of the secretary and the deputies and assistant secretaries. And then you have your White House staff. So your White House staff is going to be, at the beginning, you're going to be appointing, you're going to focus on the first 50 to 100. And then there are people that are career. There's some career people that are there, particularly in the National Security Council.
Who've worked under multiple administrations.
Yes, and also some are detailed from departments. But when you look at the way that George W. Bush handled his transition out of office, you see how important the time can be. Because one of the things they did was had people who were taking positions in the National Security Council, leadership positions, come in and sit with their counterpart in the Bush administration so they could talk about the job and different ways of mm-hmm. organizing. And people could have very honest and open discussions. And so that kind of thing is certainly not taking place well as the materials.
I want to pause here with Martha Kumar, director of the White House Transition Project. It's a project that started decades ago, providing information to a new White House staff about their individual offices, streamlining the process of transition. And you can join in 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Scott joining us from Luxembourg. Hi, Scott. What is your question about the transition process?
Part of the transition, my question is related to any of the documentation, evidence, recordings, things of that nature from the Trump administration for 4 years. What happens to those documents during the transition? I believe some of them are archived. Are they accessible for committee investigations or anything like that? So what happens to the documents that were part of the Trump administration? What happens during the transition with them?
Martha,
well,
yeah.
With the current transition work, that will be part of his records under the Presidential Records Act of 78. They have to keep all of their records except political records. They have to keep and maintain those records by the National Archives. Takes them the printed records on a regular basis. And has them stored, and those records will be available at some point, although it sure takes a long time to get them. I mean, there are times when I've been getting the president's daily diary, which is a very important document that goes through all the people the president talked to during a day, his movements during the day, when he came into the Oval Office, who he talked to, what the subjects were. And so that won't be available until 12 years after the end of the administration. But one of the things that people are doing, and I imagine news organizations are going to be doing, is using the Freedom of Information Act to get contemporary materials from the departments. So if you can't get the documents from the White House, which the White House and the Federal Records Act, you can't get the documents at the time. But what you can get is the documents from the General Services Administration. So you use FOIA to get documents, that messages and whatnot that came in from the White House. And I'm certain news organizations are currently setting up their FOIA requests for those documents.
Martha Kumar, there's sentiment out there that that President-elect Biden has the advantage of having the institutional knowledge of what needs to happen in the White House and having been the former vice president. What do you bear in mind as you hear that sentiment?
Oh, I think that's very true, that that he has known the White House from the inside as a vice president. He made an agreement with Obama before they came into office of what would be available to him. He could go into any meeting that that he wanted to, and that he would be able to tell the president what he thought. So accessibility for him was established right there. So he knew what was going on throughout the White House, but he also knew it from a Senate perspective, and knows people there from Mitch McConnell from his days, and that I think is going to be helpful at some point as well. And then he has a group of people that have worked for him for a number of years, who worked in the White House, some who worked in the Senate too. For example, Ron Klain was his chief of staff when he was vice president, and Klain was chief of staff for Vice President Gore as well. And in the Obama administration, he handled the issue of the Ebola crisis. So here you have somebody who has experience working with all the department and agencies who have a stake in the issue of a virus. And he also would have dealt with all the different drug pharmaceutical companies that were working on some kinds of vaccines.
Right. So a web of connections there. Martha, thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Martha Kumar, director of the White House Transition Project. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.